I understand some of you got together to watch the movie last night. I wish I'd been there to hear your insights then, but I'm looking forward to hearing them after the sermon. Perhaps you've heard the story about a small boy who began a walk with his father quite happily, but returned to his home in hysterics, his father at his wit's end. The child, he said, had discovered his shadow, had tried to run away from it, had tried to shake it off, had tried in desperation to lose, to stamp out this terrifying dark projection of himself. Failing, he was frightened as nothing had ever frightened him before. This Tuesday is Groundhog Day. If the groundhog sees his shadow, the legend is that we will have 6 more weeks of winter. Seeing one's shadow seems to lead to a troubled, cold, and wearying time. The question is, can this time be a journey rather than a waste? This is the question posed to Phil Connors, played by Bill Murray, weather reporter for WPBH in Pittsburgh, in the 1993 film Groundhog Day. For the 4th, and what he sincerely hopes will be the last time, Phil is sent to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, to see whether the country's most famous weather forecaster, the groundhog Punxsutawney Phil, will see his shadow. The groundhog does indeed see his shadow, thus predicting a long winter to come. Little does Phil Connors know that he is about to see his own shadow and face an even longer winter of the soul. It was psychologist Carl Jung who developed the concept of the shadow side of our personalities. By shadow, Jung wrote, I mean the negative side of the personality, the sum of all those unpleasant qualities we like to hide, together with the insufficiently developed functions and the contents of the personal unconscious. Unfortunately, he continued, there can be no doubt that man is, on the whole, less good than he imagines himself or wants to be. Everyone carries a shadow, and the less it is embodied in the individual's conscious life, the denser it is. If it is repressed and isolated from consciousness, it never gets corrected and is liable to burst forth suddenly in a moment of awareness. At all events, it forms an unconscious snag. End of quote. Phil Connors is a deeply egocentric man who hides this unpleasant quality from himself through a conviction of his power and superiority over everyone else. To him, the people who enjoy the traditions and festivities of Groundhog Day are morons and hicks. He can't wait to get out of Punxsutawney, just as he can't wait to leave WPBH for bigger and better things. But he's driven back to the small town by a blizzard he had predicted would miss that part of Pennsylvania. Don't you listen to the weather? A highway patrolman asks Phil as he complains about the highway being closed. I make the weather, he responds. But not this time. Things are about to change. Stuck in Punxsutawney for what he hopes is just one more night, Phil wakes up the next morning to discover it's Groundhog Day all over again. Yet no one but he is aware of the repetition. Everyone else is living the day for the first time, while Phil is made to live it over and over and over again. Followers of Carl Jung suggest that the messages we need to hear about ourselves, in dreams, for example, will return again and again until we get them. And so Groundhog Day will return again and again until Phil is willing to take a good look at who he is, shadow and all. One of my favorite scenes occurs when Phil asks two new drinking buddies, "What would you do if you were stuck in one place and every day was exactly the same and nothing you did mattered?" And one of them responds morosely, "That about sums it up for me." Everyone with whom I've watched the film responds as you just did. We laugh at that response. We laugh at ourselves, knowing there are times in our lives when we feel the same way. It doesn't take a deus ex machina, like a never-ending Groundhog Day, to know what it's like when every day seems the same and nothing we do matters. We can be hit with a major loss or problem. We can get stuck in depression. We can just get bored. For some people, the idea that nothing matters is liberating, at least at first. And that is just what strikes Phil. To his question, "What if there were no tomorrow?" his buddies respond, "We could do whatever we wanted." Where at first, reliving the same day seemed to Phil a loss of control over the world, he now relishes the power to act without consequences. Off Phil goes, leading police on a merry car chase, eating gluttonously, manipulating different women into bed with him, robbing security trucks to buy fancy cars and new clothes. But none of this is truly satisfying, nor what he really wants. What he really wants is Rita, played by Andie MacDowell, the producer of the news show who also came to Punxsutawney for Groundhog Day. But day after day, she sees through his manipulations to create a perfect day that will get her to go to bed with him. Life without consequences is not as promising as it looks. So what is the forecast now? Despair. It's going to be cold. It's going to be gray. And it's going to last you the rest of your life. Phil can't even commit suicide. No matter how he kills himself, he still wakes up the next morning in Punxsutawney. Every day, it's still Groundhog Day. Paradoxically, Phil's immortality makes him powerless rather than powerful. And only now, when he's hit rock bottom, is he willing to look at who he is. "I am a jerk," he concludes. And now there's hope. Now there's power, the power to change. All of us have shadow sides to our personalities, and most, if not all of us, resist seeing them. In our unwillingness to acknowledge our shadows, we project what we are most afraid of in ourselves onto other people. The effect of projection, Jung tells us, is to isolate the subject from his environment, since instead of a real relation to it, there is now only an illusory one. Projections change the world into the replica of one's unknown face. The morons and hicks with whom Phil populates the world may well be what he is most afraid of finding in himself. What's fascinating, though, about our shadow sides is that although they contain some of our worst potentials, they're the source of our prejudices, for example, they may also contain some of our best. Remember that Jung says the shadow side contains both the unpleasant qualities we like to hide and our insufficiently developed functions. The shadow represents what is undeveloped as well as what is repressed. The shadow of egocentricity and sarcasm, which Phil casts, also holds the undeveloped possibilities of connection and kindness, of which Phil has, up until now, been afraid. Some of you may be familiar with the Myers-Briggs Personality Inventory, a way of understanding our personalities based on Jungian archetypes. Based on our answers to a number of questions, we find ourselves on one side or the other of four different categories. Let me offer just the first example, introversion and extroversion. Introverts are those people whose energy comes from within. Extroverts, those whose energy comes from being with other people. Or, you could think of it this way, introverts think to talk, and extroverts talk to think. Now, the wonderful thing about the Myers-Briggs test is that there are no wrong answers. There are no wrong personalities. Introverts have strengths and weaknesses, and so do extroverts. So do both sides of the other three categories in the test. The point is to become conscious of one's own strengths, and here's the crucial point, appreciative of the different strengths of other people. Yet there's more to it. Jung suggests that the first part of our life, growing up, building a personality, relationships, perhaps a career or a family, is the time when we concentrate on our natural strengths. Whether one is naturally introverted or extroverted will shape one's life to a large extent, for example. But we ought not to rest content with developing natural strengths and leaving other possibilities in the shadows, especially when that means that we're likely to look askance at others who show us what our shadowy possibilities could be. Instead, Jung points to midlife as the time when we should intentionally begin to work on developing our shadow sides. I've taken the Myers-Briggs inventory a few times and always come out with the same personality type. On the introvert-extrovert scale, I'm a strong introvert. Friends who have known me for a long time are not the least bit surprised by this. But some people who've come to know me just in the last several years sometimes are. It seems that ministry has helped me to develop some capacity for extroversion. I'll never be an extrovert in the real sense of that term. I will always find my best energy alone. But I'm able now to get some energy from other people in ways beyond what I once could. Now, I didn't consciously, of course, decide to be a minister so that I could become more extroverted, but that I'm developing some pieces of my shadow in ministry suggests that that was a healthy midlife choice for me. Of course, the other side of developing extroversion was acknowledging, and taking responsibility for the shadow sides, the negative sides of my introversion. In my case, I often turned my introversion into withdrawal, sometimes into depression, and I can too easily avoid rather than confront conflict. I can't get better without taking into account the ways I can be worse and taking responsibility for those. That's why Phil's admitting I am a jerk is so hopeful. Now his undeveloped possibilities for connecting with and caring about others can surface and begin to grow. His inspiration comes from Rita, the producer whose kindness and generosity he comes finally to admire rather than disdain. Instead of trying to seduce her, Phil tries to become worthy of her. And in so doing, he seems to discover that kindness and generosity can be ends in themselves. Here again, Phil has to learn that he is not all-powerful. No matter his efforts day after day, for example, he cannot save an old man on the street whose time it is to die. But he can save the boy falling from the tree and the man choking on a piece of meat. He can help the women with the flat tire and the couple unsure about marriage. He can read deeply, and he can even learn to play the piano. And as he begins to care about Rita and about the people of Punxsutawney, he begins to realize that everything rather than nothing matters, because they matter. Even if it's Groundhog Day all over again when he wakes up the next morning. If it all gets erased, it will all be worth doing over again. It turns out that winter is not a waste of time, not something to be gotten over, but a crucial step in our journeys, and a time when we can, as Phil says, bask in the warmth of hearths and hearts. And that, of course, is just what Phil needed to learn. Like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, who can end her journey in Oz when she learns that there is no place like home, so Phil can end his journey in Groundhog Day when he learns that every moment matters in and of itself. Finally, he wakes up on February 3rd. Phil's journey is one that all of us must make, the journey from self to community. Some religious or philosophical worldviews ask us to make that journey in the course of one life. Others see the journey occurring over the span of many reincarnations. Theologian John Hick states that this journey, quote, is of central concern to each of the great world faiths. Each in its different way calls us to transcend the ego point of view, which he says is the source of all selfishness, greed, exploitation, cruelty, and injustice, and to become recentered in that ultimate mystery, which Hick simply calls the real, and which some of us call the interdependent web. Now, you may be thinking it's typically Hollywood to have Phil saved by romantic love. That may sometimes happen, but the mystery of our world takes many different forms. Many of us are moved beyond our ego point of view by the beauty of nature or art, or the wonder of science or mathematics or philosophy. Friendships are a critical part of my journey to move beyond myself, and that may be true for you. Perhaps this congregation is a part of that for you. Hollywood's imagination may be limited, but the world's is not. But can one be saved at all? Can people change? Can Phil really start out as an egocentric jerk and end up a kind and generous man? There's really no way for us to know how genuine Phil's change is. Perhaps Phil isn't quite sure yet himself. The deeper question is whether anyone, including us, can really change. But I think we can. Sometimes even people who begin to behave better for selfish reasons find the change in behavior makes an eventual difference to the way they think and feel inside. A friend of mine at St. John's University, who had originally resisted attempts to use more inclusive language, confessed that he finally started using it not out of a change of heart, but simply to stay out of trouble with his female colleagues. But over time, the change made more and more sense to him, and finally he used it out of his own conviction. That we can change, that we can become more connected, more generous beings, was the deep faith of our Universalist forebears, who believed that God would never give up hope in us, and neither should we. So I hope we can change. I hope we can learn to integrate our shadow sides with our conscious personalities. I hope we can make the religious journey from ego to community. May all of us wake up to only one Groundhog Day this week. May all of us know that every day, whom we meet and what we do in it matters. And may all of us keep faith in the possibility of a world of greater connection and kindness. So may it be.